This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Welcome to another episode of L&G Talks Asset Management. Imagine working hard for decades, only to find out your pension isn't enough to support the retirement you worked for. Well, according to the Department for Work and Pensions, a third of the working age population could be undersaving for retirement. I'm Dee Campbell, DC Content Manager in L&G's asset management business, and today I'm joined by three investment experts to examine why, against that concerning stat, smarter DC investment strategies are more important than ever. Welcome to John Rowe, Head of Multi-Asset Funds.
Hello.
Hello. Martin Dietz, Head of Diversified Strategies.
Hi, everybody.
And Will Chan, Senior DC Strategies Manager.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Will. Thank you to all of you for joining us today. John, if I can start with you, pensions adequacy is a critical issue for the industry. We know that. Can you share how investments are evolving to help address this and unlock long-term growth?
Yeah, thanks, Dee. So the issues of pension adequacy will become a bigger and bigger problem over the next decade as more retirees have less in terms of defined benefit and are more reliant on defined contribution. And there have been a number of levers used to try and address that. And one of those has been to see if there's anything we can do to increase long-term returns on people's savings. Now, that's led to a number of measures. And so, for example, when auto-enrollment first came in, there was a real concern that if people experienced negative investment returns, it might cause them to react. It might cause them to stop saving for retirement, for example. And so initially, a lot of schemes and providers diversified the risk to reduce the chance of experiencing those types of outcomes. But what we've seen over time is that there's increasing evidence that people actually look through that kind of short-term performance, continue saving, and don't react to it, which is really great news because that's meant people can increase the allocations to equities and other growth assets, which in turn targets a higher long-term return while accepting somewhat higher investment risk along the journey. Now, even within that, as you allocate more to growth assets, we think diversification remains really important. So, for example, exposure to global infrastructure or global property. These can provide long-term exposure to economic growth and provide cash flows that are expected to grow at a rate that's higher than inflation. Then when we get closer to retirement, we've also seen action there. So we've seen increasing investment risk by shortening the de-risking period for people approaching retirement and also owning somewhat higher growth assets even as people enter that retirement phase.
Okay, that's really interesting. So let's look at some of the kind of different areas in a little more detail that's coming more to the forefront of DC investing. So Will, responsible investing, it was previously considered perhaps non-traditional, but it is becoming more important to DC investments. What changes have you seen here?
Yeah, thanks, Dee. So you used the term non-traditional. I think that's quite an interesting term to describe responsible investing. So on the one hand, it has become very integrated with mainstream investment, for example, exclusions of certain sectors. But then you're right, there are more non-traditional areas now starting to emerge. And actually, that gives rise to new opportunities. So an example of this is in nature conservation and biodiversity. And this can include lending to specific projects around the world to support these big themes like education, healthcare, clean water, and biodiversity. So these themes then not only help support the funding gap to achieve certain milestones in things like the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals by 2030, but they also connect well with DC members. It helps them to gain exposure to fast-growing sectors and impactful sectors. In this particular case with the nature and biodiversity, it's with the global fixed income market. It's also a great example of the increasing diverse range of assets that DC schemes can invest in, combining that need to unlock financing where it's needed most, and then with the aim of ultimately of delivering great outcomes for members as they approach and go to retirement. And on top of that, we've also invested in things like clean energy and healthcare innovation. So these are areas which we think support our members as demographics change, as people get older and older, and they also have potential to become the growth sectors of the future.
Thanks, Will. And then Martin, if I can bring you in, there's also been a lot of noise around private markets. What's driving this shift for DC?
Yeah, thanks. So first of all, when we think about private markets, we think about tangible assets such as wind farms, infrastructure, affordable housing, but also innovative startups. The illiquidity of private market assets really means they're typically really well suited for investors with a longer time horizon. And that makes them a really good addition for DC default funds, given the long investment horizon of DC members. And we've seen exactly that happening in other markets such as Australia, who've been using private markets for a long time already. Now, the benefits for members include the potential for higher returns, just a reward for being a long-term investor, and then our ability to pick specific investments, but also diversification and risk management, just given the wide range of private market investments that are available to us. Affordable housing is a really great example there. It can offer lower volatility and stable, predictable cash flows. It can often outperform, therefore, during economic downturns. It's positioned quite high on the impact scale, and it benefits from government support. I would say affordable housing is increasingly recognized as a real economic value investment that directly benefits communities as well.
So, all that being said, why has private markets only become mainstream for DC investors in the last few years?
Yeah, there were a lot of challenges, such as additional charges, operational efficiency, finding the right risk return management and implementation management, and then, of course, the liquidity. Now, we have seen regulatory change over the past couple of years that included the creation of the LTAF, and that has eased some of the problems. But I think more broadly, this has been a case of DC growing up and becoming more mature and just more important in general. And that meant it gets now the right level of attention, and we're simply working through these problems with the right level of focus. Looking at liquidity, for example, DC schemes have this continuous ebb and flow of capital and, of course, an operational need for daily valuations. And they require the daily dealing that the platform model really needs to function well. So we needed to make sure that the liquidity management is properly integrated into our investment model. There were many similar important considerations we also then took into account, just to make sure that private market exposure gets properly embedded into the default strategy. So one of many aspects where I think we really benefit from being an asset management team, having asset management capabilities, so we can solve all of these challenges in a hands-on way. We can integrate the investment decision-making with liquidity management and the operational aspects. And one example there was kind of our choice of core private market asset classes. We took a cautious approach towards private equity over the last 1 year, given high valuations. We focused on private credit instead, and we're now building up that private equity exposure. So we want to be very selective. We want to really identify assets that deliver all of the things we need, the risk management, the diversification, and the strong returns, but also positive assets that have a purpose that resonate really well with the members. So yeah, one extra example there, we've recently added to digital infrastructure, so data centers and assets that are linked to the AI revolution. The technology sector is seeing really strong investor interest. And we think, however, the outcomes of that are sometimes quite difficult to predict. And data center demand is quite more obvious, and the development there is something that maybe offers a slightly lower risk approach to the same theme.
The industry change here has been really interesting and unusual. To see such a big shift in the mindset of regulators, the government, employee benefit consultants, and providers has been really quite coordinated. And in that way, it's having a very significant impact, as Martin says. It's caused people to really think about the role that private markets can play as part of that shift from focusing on low fees towards focusing on value to member outcomes. And private assets do cost more, but they diversify by accessing different types of assets and different types of expertise from the managers, and also potentially give a liquidity premium for owning those non-listed investments over the long term. And that combo can then improve member outcomes. Now, earlier this year, back in May, we had the Mansion House Accord, and that really solidified targets but those are really based around the existing thinking of the signatories. So our team were actually very closely involved in LNG's contribution to the drafting of the accord, and it was very much in line with what we expected to do already. The way it was outlined gave us plenty of flexibility by including lots of asset classes that were part of private assets. Not only that, but while there was a UK focus, we think there are reasons that that makes sense anyway. So first of all, from a sourcing perspective, it's somewhat easier to source in your domestic market. It's somewhat easier to manage operational risk when it's in the same country as this pension scheme legislation itself. Then, of course, for UK assets, you don't require currency hedging. And there's also that very important element of member engagement. Now, why does it matter if members engage more or are more interested or positive on what their DC savings are invested in? Well, it could be a route to another important lever for addressing pensions adequacy, which would be over the long term to try and increase contributions. And to some degree, you need engagement before you get more focus on, am I contributing enough? Now, not only that, but we actually think at the moment the UK is relatively attractive for private markets anyway. And we see that with some of the interest from international managers in UK assets. But if that were ever to change, then in both the overall target for private markets and the UK sub-focus within that, it's very important to remain that these are targets set out in the accord. They're not a binding commitment. So it's very much about recognising the role that these assets can play rather than trying to restrict managers in any way in the future.
Thanks, John. And what I found really interesting about all of the innovations and points that you've spoken about is that they're all part of default ranges. And with around 90% of UK DC pension savers in default strategies, I would imagine that innovation here is really essential.
Yes, it's a really difficult one. So for modern day defaults, they really need to look to deliver more for those members where they're not choosing to actively engage. And that's across the growth stages, while then also in the approach to the decumulation phase, starting to balance that more with risk management. So, for example, as you get towards decumulation, strategies may need to place greater focus on risk management by lowering the equity content, increasing the diversification of the asset types, and also potentially using dynamic asset allocation to help manage the risk as markets evolve.
Yeah, I think that's really important, John, because if you had just a static allocation to equity, which is not so innovative, but very mainstream, you'd encounter situations like April 2025, which was actually a wake-up for many, where markets are very volatile, short-term volatility increased significantly, and a hit two of the main parts of the market, which had done very well up to then. So US equities and the US dollar. Now, as I mentioned, either side of both this April 2025 period, US equities have been very, very strong. So we have to think about how to address this, what we call like a constant puzzle of how to capture the upside of, you know, equity markets booming, but also manage that downside. And that's very important, especially in the lead up to retirement. And we think diversification is actually key to help manage this risk. And it's one of our core investment philosophies. So within one of our default ranges, we gain diversification in both the growth phase and the approaching retirement phase with both private markets and also certain fixed income elements. And then within the other default range, we have allocations to listed alternatives and areas such as emerging market debt and high yield debt. And that also helps bring diversification.
Yeah. And then on top of that, of course, we diversify across names, sectors, currencies, and regions. But at the same time, we need to make sure we don't miss out on the highest growth areas of the economy, which can happen when you diversify away from, example, particularly the US, which has a lot of the companies that have the fastest growing earnings. So, for example, AI, and Martin's already mentioned this, but we can ensure we get the right level of exposure there to these names in a deliberate, targeted, and still diversified way, via an allocation to tilted US technology stocks and also individual AI companies.
And then you mentioned the importance of balancing growth with risk management. So what do you think are the key considerations going forward to balance the two? Will, if I can start with you.
Yeah, so just by way of background, over the past few months, we have commenced a deep dive review into the way we structure our DC default strategies. And we're now in a position to evolve both the growth phase for members far from retirement and the retirement phase for those who are close to retirement. As part of this, we also continue to believe that target date funds are a very appropriate structure for both communicating and engaging with members, and in that they go to and through that retirement phase as well, which is quite important for member engagement. And it also helps us operationally make changes much more easily under the bonnet and to apply the innovations we've been talking about in this podcast.
Yeah, and we're looking at ways to support decumulation and those later stages of retirement saving. So as DC savers approach retirement, they typically can't afford very high levels of allocation to equities and similar growth assets because of the risk of market drawdowns. And so to some degree, there's been a historical focus on putting them more into fixed income. But as people become more reliant on DC in retirement and more people are using it as a long-term income drawdown vehicle, it becomes increasingly important that they don't miss out on valuable upside potential over the period they are invested. So in today's climate of uncertainty and increasing reliance on DC investments, it really is this very delicate balance between taking that risk earlier on and then as you de-risk, still being cognizant of not overly de-risking people. Because even though that might give them peace of mind in the short term, over the long term, it won't give the growth that's necessary to really support those high quality retirement outcomes.
Yeah, I think what we want to do overall is we want to make the assets work harder. It's about really using every lever that we have at our disposal as multi-asset investors and as asset allocators. We need to improve the sophistication of DC strategies with more complicated asset classes. And that means combining private and public market assets. That means including multiple different asset classes. And then also, we clearly have the expertise in more dynamic asset allocation and the use of more advanced risk management solutions as well. The smart investment strategies that we need, they aren't always about chasing kind of quick wins. They're about building resilience into the portfolio when it comes to these occasional drawdowns that Will mentioned. And then a clear focus on long-term goals and in particular then the outcomes of the members.
Thank you all. That's really interesting. So let's come back full circle to the pension adequacy issue. So investment evolution alone can't solve this, although there's a lot being done in this space. What other factors are at play to help address this?
I think regulatory change is a key driver. And to give you an international comparison, this was a big part of what changed DC in the US a long time ago. They introduced what was called safe harbor in the US, which allowed much greater experimentation with boundaries where people knew they could be confident that if they help members in that way, they weren't going to be exposed to regulatory risks further down the line. And in the UK, we are seeing a lot of regulatory change now. We have the Pensions Commission with its remit to help address pensions adequacy. We have the government's Pensions Investment Review and the FCA's Advice Guidance Boundary Review. And the second of those is particularly important because that will really hopefully help providers be able to provide more support to individual members in a way that's cost efficient, relevant to their circumstances, but isn't considered individual advice. When we put that alongside the other measures and regulatory change that's coming, it's likely to bring more consolidation within the industry. It should increase investment in UK productive assets, in part because there are a wide range of them available and also that benefit with member engagement. And it can also add that greater focus on value for money rather than pure outright fees. And then schemes will need to really adapt to these new frameworks and support members through these complex retirement decisions. And that's again where consolidation might be so important because providers are going to have to make quite large commitments and monetarily in order to support the changes that are coming our way. And then really that major shift on the move away from cost to a broader focus on value and member outcomes is probably the solidifying factor between what we're seeing on the regulatory side and then on the investment strategy side. And through trustees and employers prioritizing these types of approaches to get those retirement outcomes for savers, it can be a key factor in better outcomes, and we can drive innovation in pension strategy and design. It can hopefully help meet the pensions adequacy problem that we know will come more greatly into focus over the next decade.
Yeah, exactly. I think the greater focus on the net returns and on the value and value for money, that really will allow us to add allocations to private equity infrastructure in real real assets into default strategies that offers members access to these potential high growth sectors. And these assets, of course, they also offer the diversification, which will need to remain really central as a risk management tool. But outside of the investment side, we are seeing technology to transform the member engagement and the personalization of the investment strategy as well. So increasing use of digital tools and AI and data-driven solutions is really helping savers make better decisions, helps us to communicate with them in a much better way, and enables kind of schemes to tailor their investment strategies to these individual needs.
And I guess circling back to what John started with at the very beginning, we are expecting over the next 5 to 10 years, a big switch of members who have DB benefits in the past. So let's call it Generation DB to Generation DC. And with that comes other innovation in retirement income solutions. So for example, hybrid default strategies, where you combine things like target date fund strategies with some guaranteed income products. And those are the types of retirement innovations that are going to gain traction and are already gaining traction, just helping members transition smoothly from saving to spending in retirement.
Thank you all. Well, it's clear from this that the playbook for DC investments is changing. It's a new era. It's going to be one defined by smarter investment strategies, which we've just heard about, greater diversification and technology. And I must say, as a DC saver myself, it is fascinating and encouraging to learn about the investment strategies and levers being pulled to help my retirement years. So I just want to say a big thank you to John, Martin and Will for your insight and time today. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities, undertaking for collective investment in transferable securities regulations 2011 as amended, and as an alternative investment fund manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.